Hey friend, Graham Baldwin here with the Speaker Lab. Hey, wouldn't it be nice if someone gave you the exact process to find and book more speaking gigs in 2024? That'd be nice, right? Well, I'll tell you what, we're just going to do that for you. We've created a new 18-page guide based on Dan Irvin's process that helped him actually book over $100,000 in speaking gigs in the past year. Now, Dan is one of our team members here. He's a very successful speaker and also one of our coaches. And so you're going to learn how to get started prospecting, master discovery calls, proposal emails, and so much more. All you got to do is go to thespeakerlab.com/steps. Again, that's plural. thespeakerlab.com/steps. We're going to send you that PDF guide right to your inbox. Again, that is thespeakerlab.com/steps. That's it. That's all you got to do. Go there. Hey, thanks for listening. We appreciate it. You're awesome. Hey, what's up, friends? Graham Baldwin here. Welcome back to the Speaker Lab podcast. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're having a great day. We have a great guest for you today. This is a good topic that we haven't really addressed or haven't really talked about, and I'm excited to get to that. Before we do, let me remind you, if you haven't already, go pick up your copy of The Successful Speaker. This is our new book that walks you through the five steps for booking gigs, getting paid, building your platform. So if you want to know a step-by-step systematic process, this is my brain dump of everything you need to know about all things speaking, then go pick it up. Go check it out. Again, the book is called The Successful Speaker. Go find it at bookstores now. All right, so today we are talking with my friend Michael Bungay Stanger. And Michael does a lot as a keynoter, but also does a lot in the corporate training space. So this is something, again, we haven't really touched on, haven't really addressed. We cover a lot here about corporate training, which topics make the most sense, kind of the difference between positioning yourself as the product versus positioning the program as the product. We talk about who hires corporate trainers, how do you do pricing for that, even some of the virtual options in the current climate that we've been in. So we have a really fun conversation here. I think you're going to get a lot from this, some really practical stuff that Michael walks through. So let's jump right into this conversation with Michael. Enjoy. Hey, what's up, friends? Graham Baldwin here. Welcome back to the Speaker Lab podcast. Today, joined by my friend, Mr. Michael Bungay Stanier. Stanier, there we go.
You got it.
I'm not even going to go.
It was a momentary stumble. It was fine.
You got to push through it.
Look, I once got a letter addressed to Professor Michael Banging Spaniel. And quite frankly, having been called Banging Spaniel, pretty much nobody can do worse than that. So it's like, whatever. Approximately right is good enough.
The bar is high.
So exactly.
Thanks for hanging out with us. We appreciate you spending a minute with us. For people who aren't familiar with you, give us kind of a nutshell of what your business looks like and how speaking fits into the mix.
Yeah. So I founded a company called Box of Crayons nigh on 20 years ago. You know, when I started, it was the classic solopreneur mix of anything. Right. It's like, you'll pay me for that? I could probably do that.
Right.
So it was a mix of facilitation and consulting and training and a tiny bit of speaking. And over the years, it's kind of grown and shifted. Box of Crayons has ended up being a really classic learning and development company. That's what it does. It brings training into organizations. I'm the former CEO. It's 6 months ago, it was taken over by one of my colleagues, Shannon, who is, first of all, far better CEO than I have ever been in my life. So she's amazing.
Yeah.
And she's also brought a discipline to the company that I am absolutely unable to bring to anything. So my speaking tends to be brought in to open up a strategic client.
Yeah.
You know, we work for, let's say Microsoft is one of our clients. We're putting lots of people through our training there. I'll come in and I'll speak at a big conference with thousands of people to kind of introduce stuff, get people going, get people engaged, and then the training team will come in and roll out the learning behind that.
Interesting. Very good. And so has that basically always been your model, more or less?
Well, I mean, honestly, for many years at Box of Crayons, we were a really small shop. It was pretty much me and a team around me. You know, I was the product.
Yep.
So I would go in and I would either give a speech or I would run a workshop or I'd have other people who I'd trained to run workshops for me. But I didn't really distinguish between giving a speech and running a workshop, which is partly weird because there's just a different pricing model involved in it. You know, you can charge a lot more for a keynote even though it's 60 minutes, than you can for a one-day training program typically. And it was always confusing. We never quite figured that out. And then over time, I was like, you know what? One of the things I've learned in trying to run a company is focus just really helps. And I'm not naturally inclined to focus. I'm a bit of a shiny object dude. Oh, look there, over there. Right. This discipline of saying, okay, actually, we're not offering training on everything Michael knows something about, which is innovation and market research and strategy and communications and.
Yeah.
We are teaching people how to be more coach-like. That's the thing. How to stay curious a little bit longer, how to rush to action and advice giving a little bit more slowly. And 4 years ago, I wrote a book called The Coaching Habit, which went gangbusters in a very exciting way. So it's now sold close to 750,000 copies now.
Congrats.
Thank you. Yeah, it's exciting. Not least because it got turned down by publishers, so I self-published it. And I'm like, okay, who's feeling smug now? I'm feeling smug right now. I'm feeling pretty good about this.
That's awesome.
And that the success of that book brought more clients to Box of Crayons, and it required us to get even stricter about our business model, which is Michael is dispersed occasionally as a speaker within the context of a bigger contract that we're trying to win with our clients.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you made that kind of differentiation there, because I think that we get a lot of speakers who come to us who have some of those questions around, am I selling me as the product, or am I selling the company as a product under which I am part of that? And so there really is an important distinction there to think
through.
Really is. So, if you fast forward to today and what Box of Crayons looks like you described there's a difference between, are you hiring Michael or are you hiring Box of Crayons? And Michael happens to be one of the facilitators or one of the presenters there.
That's right. And, there was a decision I made early on, which was I was trying to grow the Box of Crayons brand rather than trying to grow the Michael brand.
Yeah.
Because I could see scalability issues as soon as, if I was just trying to grow Michael, at a certain point, you're like, I can only do so many things in a year.
Yep.
I can only charge so much money in a year.
Exactly.
And it's less about the money for me, but it is about impact and it's about reach.
Yeah.
So right from the start, I had a conversation around, okay, if what needs to be true for me to be scalable? And it requires a whole bunch of work that you don't quite realize when you're a speaker. Because at least my experience is when I was speaking and when I was running my own stuff, I'm pretty good on stage. I'm pretty good in the moment. And so it had a core to it. And then it had Michael's embellishments. Because I'm like, hey, here I am. I'm working with the audience. I've thought of a funny joke I'm going to try out. Right. Oh, here's something else I could teach you because it's interesting. I just read about it. And here's a little aside.
Yeah.
Scaling means productization. So for me to build a company where I've got 20 people who can deliver programs, a whole bunch of stuff has to happen. One is I have to codify what I do. Mm-hmm. So I have to write out what I do. I have to write out speaker notes. I have to shoot videos. I have to make content accessible to people so that they can see the path and they can walk the path.
Right.
Secondly, I've got to figure out what my standards are. Because here's the thing happens when you watch somebody else deliver your content. You throw up in your mouth because you have designed your content to be delivered by you. So nobody will ever do it as well as you, because it's designed to play to your strengths and cover up your weaknesses and make you look good.
Yeah.
So you have to get clear on what good enough looks like when it's not you delivering it. And it's a drop in standards.
Right.
And you need to try and find that place where it's like, this is good enough for any clients or any participants, even though I can see how I would have done it a little bit better.
Right.
Then you've got to figure out what standard at which you want to bring in your other facilitators or your other program leaders. You know, is it you need to be a mini Michael. You just need to be me. Early on, I was like, that is a heavy burden to place on anybody. I mean, really, right. Nobody wants to be anything like me in any way, shape, or form, even if they're getting paid for it. So part of what I'm then looking for is I'm like, I need to find the right type of person who has confidence in a room, who has gravitas, who has lightness, but also has a personality that I can say to them, look, I want you to be a full expression of yourself because I know that that fits within a brand experience that I am looking to create.
Right.
And then you've got to get to a sales process because what will happen is people call you up and go, hey, Grant, come and deliver this speech. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and Grant goes, well, it's not me, but I've got somebody on my team, Michael, who I'd love to send along. Yeah. And they're like, well, you know, I don't know, who's Michael?
Right.
Why would we say, hang on, I'm like, no, he's literally 30% cheaper than I am. And they're like, well, no, we don't care that much. You know, we really want you because you're the author, you're the name, you're the person,
Yep. You're
the creator.
Yep.
So now you've got to have a sales process that manages you out of the conversation so that you become an occasional person to come and speak rather than the default person. Yeah. So it's, I tend to be a believer of if you're going to do it, you got to do it well. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're just half-assing it. And actually, you tend to just waste people's time and money and your own time and money. And, you know, by committing to the business model that we've got, we're able to build a company that is, you know, it's like in the $5 to $10 million range of revenue, Yeah. Which you can't really get to if you're a solo speaker. So there's real upside.
Yep,
however, you also have to build an infrastructure. Yep. So, you know, the burn rate at Box of Crayons is, let's say if it's a $5 million company, the burn rate somewhere between $3 and $4 million a year, mm-hmm. which translates to, like $300,000 a month. Now, I don't know about you, but I remember when I started my business and just the first year I cracked $100,000. I was like, this is amazing.
Right.
I by myself have managed to generate $100,000 in revenue. This is extraordinary. I mean, honestly, all I need to do is keep doing this for the rest of my life and I've got a sweet, sweet life. And that's true. But now I'm spending that almost per week to run a company.
Yeah.
So you really want to understand the prizes and the punishments of scalability because there are real prizes. There's real freedom. I mean, for instance, I can now step away from Box of Crayons, have it run by somebody else, and I have the deep satisfaction of watching that company be well-led, hopefully continue to flourish in these difficult times.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've got some legacy there and know that it's employing 20 people who have good lives because of the work that I helped build and create.
Yeah.
But there's responsibility that comes there as well.
The whole concept kind of reminds me of like, it's choosing between like, do you want to run a restaurant where you as the chef are kind of the star of the show, or do you want a franchise knowing that there's one of you and you can't be at every restaurant. And it's not that necessarily one's better or worse than the other. They both have their pros and cons, but you making the conscious decision of, if I do one restaurant, then I can control every part of that restaurant. But if I have other restaurants and I can only be one place at one time, then I got, like you said, I got to codify it. I really got to put some systems and processes.
You totally do. And I see, you know, I see a lot of speakers dabbling with the idea of maybe I could find some other people to come and run some of my programs some of the time.
Yeah.
And it rarely works. I mean, I'm thinking of Simon Sinek. Simon Sinek has a small team of people who go and deliver the Simon Sinek speech for them. But I think he's a rare person who's actually figured out ways of selling that. And I think it's because he's got speaker bureaus who sell for him who go, we're desperate to sell a Simon Sinek product and he's in high demand. So we've got enough, we can pull that off.
Yeah.
But most people who dabbled haven't succeeded because it's hard to succeed with this if you're just kind of doing it a little bit.
Well, it also seems like a big variable and factor is the industry that you're in and who it is that you, or what it is that you speak about, what's the problem to solve, because there's going to be corporate training topics that seem to lend themselves better than to this industry than others. So
that's
how
right.
Have you kind of figured out if, you know, for someone who may be listening going like, okay, I know what my core thing is.
Yeah.
And I think this would work in a corporate training environment.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to figure out like, is there legs to this or not?
Yeah, it's a really great question, because the people who buy keynotes are not the people who buy learning and development solutions. They're just, they're very different people.
Yeah.
Even if they're working in...
And actually, let me jump in real quick. For people who aren't clear, can you kind of define what the difference would be between like a keynote, a workshop, yeah. and like a corporate training? Because I, myself, like I never came from a corporate background at all.
Sure.
So I have never sat in on as a participant to know like, what are the real differences between corporate training versus a keynote or workshop, or what we would typically think of as, a gun for hire speaker?
So I'd say there are three broad opportunities. The first is keynote. Mm-hmm. Somebody calls you up and goes, we're running a conference. It's a company conference. We've got 3,000 of our salespeople coming in, or it's our HR team is flying in, or, you know, there's a crowd of people that are in the room for some reason. And in amongst the corporate topics that need to be talked about, because we need our leaders to give an update, and we need a new strategy to be shared, and we need an update on diversity inclusion, we're going to get some external speakers to add a little kind of magic to it.
Yeah.
And depending on the theme of the conference, you know, if you're a sales guy, you'll come in. If you're a marketing guy, you'll come in. If you're a leadership person, you'll come in. You'll be matched to the type of conference and theme of the conference that they're after.
Yeah.
And they're pretty much great, come on in. I run a conference. I'm curating the experience. I've got a budget of X grand to pay for speakers. You're one of them. I give you my brief. You come in and you do your speech.
Right.
You mention the name of my company at the start and at the finish, so it feels customized. And then you walk off and your work here is done.
Yep.
And you probably don't hear from them again.
Right.
There's your keynote speaking model. Really clean, transactional. If you're in demand, super lucrative, you know, you can run definitely a six figure and some people a seven figure career on that with with you, an admin assistant, and not much else. So it's fantastic if you can pull it off. Then there is ad hoc training requirements. And within an organization, there will be people who have a budget to train their team. So someone's running a small sales team in Winnipeg, and they're like, I like my team. What do we need? Oh, we need stuff around communications, because we're okay, but we need that. Or maybe a Myers-Briggs profile, or maybe coaching skills, or who knows, something. And they'll basically cast around, and they'll do some Googling, and they'll come across perhaps a local training provider who'll go, yeah, I can do that. And they go, great, we've got a small budget, or we've got a decent budget. And you come in and you do a bit of work with them. And if you're lucky, you maybe get called back another few times. If you're lucky, somebody hears about you in the same organization and goes, hey, I heard you did a session for Joanne. Sounds really good. Could you come and do it for my team as well?
Yeah.
And then you get a little bit of ability to engage within that organization. If you're a good salesperson, you then work that and work it and work it. You're like, who can you introduce me to? And you kind of find a way of trying to get throughout that organization as best you can. But it's ad hoc and it's dependent on individual teams or business units having pools of money set aside for training.
Right.
Then the third option is enterprise L&D. So this is the team that's responsible for bringing training and putting it throughout an organization or throughout a big chunk of an organization. So, here in Canada, some years ago, we got called in by the enterprise learning team for TD Bank, one of the four big banks here. And they're like, great, we need these coaching skills and we need everybody at a certain level in the bank to go through it. Doesn't matter if you're in retail banking or wholesale banking or investment banking, all of the people at this level need to have that because it's part of how we build a culture across our organization. Mm-hmm. And these are the contracts that are the bigger contracts, more lucrative, harder to sell. They take longer to, the sales cycle is like somewhere between 6 and 12 months, or longer than that. You're now negotiating with procurement as part of that organization whose only job is to try and squeeze you until you squeak. So procurement don't get involved if you're just a sales team hiring somebody trainer because it's too small. Yeah. But if you're like, if this is now a 6 or 7 figure training budget, they're managing it at that enterprise level. There are all sorts of stakeholders who you go up and down the chain because the head of something or other has to sign off on it and the head of something else has to sign off on it. But then if you get that signed, there are then 3 different delivery models that happen as part of that. One delivery model is you show up with your trainers and you deliver the programs. And that can be great. It requires you, though, to have a bunch of trainers and who can deliver at your standard. There was a moment where a company called us up and went, "We found out about you. You're amazing. We're doing this big conference. Come out because we'd like to try you out. We need you to run 15 concurrent sessions in Vegas." We're like, "This is amazing." Because this is a 1 day gig, yeah, that will get us more than $100,000 and American dollars of that, which as a Canadian you get quite excited about. But then I'm like, wow, okay, we have more than 15 trainers on our books, but they're not all available, they're not all in the States. And there was a bunch of scrambling behind the scenes to make sure that we could deliver against our promise there. Yeah. But that's one delivery model, which is you go in and you bring your people with you and you do the training. The second delivery model is train the trainer. So that's where you go, right, I'm coming in and I'm going to train your learning, your facilitators to deliver my model for me. So there's a combination of licensing. They pay a licensing fee for every person that they train, plus a training fee for you bringing their people up to speed. And often enough, that model will have some time limitations on it, which is like your training is good for 2 years.
Yeah.
Or thirdly, you can do a straight licensing deal, which is most common with if you've codified your training in some way. So it's, say, virtual training or it's online training. And they're like, we're just going to give you the assets and we're going to figure out a price and you're going to pay us that price. And then you're responsible for putting it through the organization, and what we do is we collect the check from you. Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious then, I got several questions, but one would be, so going back to, you mentioned like the different models in terms of the keynote, the ad hoc, yeah, the enterprise, it, yeah, sounds like you have kind of walked those stairs yourself.
Oh, you totally.
As a keynote, then started doing more ad hoc, now do some enterprise stuff. And so it's kind of evolved that way. And so it also sounds, and so even on the, then on the 3 delivery options, are you doing all of those 3? Are you, mm-hmm, doing one of those 3, or what does that look like today?
Yeah. So the evolution of Boxy Crayons, it started off being kind of keynote and ad hoc. Mm-hmm. Then we won our first enterprise client, which was the TD Bank, which is super exciting, and, yeah, and was 3 or 4 years of a really rich relationship, both kind of financially lucrative, but also it's like we're shifting a culture, and that was really exciting for, yeah, us. 2 years ago, as Shannon took over being, or kind of moved into this leadership role at Boxy Crayons, we figured out that our model, which was based around we can do ad hoc and it's nice when enterprise lands, it meant that we had to build a really big infrastructure to cope with it. Because in our final year of doing these kind of ad hoc sales, we had 160 clients in a year. Mm. Some of them running one workshop, some of them running 5, some of them running 100. And it just basically made our head explode because there's so many logistics for managing 160 different clients. We have to send materials there. We have to send program leaders out. We have to manage contracts. Mm-hmm. And basically, the business model broke at a certain stage. It scaled up, and then it was great for many years, and then it just broke.
Yeah.
So Box of Crayons now has a really clear focus on enterprise sales only. So we're transitioning away from the other stuff. And this is the power of focus, which is like, right, they're now rebuilding Box of Crayons in a way that serves enterprise. And then you ask that great strategic question, what needs to be true so that we can serve an enterprise, you know, a Fortune 100 company?
Yeah.
Well, for instance, you need to have somebody who is really good at contracts. The contracts that speakers use are just laughed. You know, they're just laughed at if you're trying to negotiate at an enterprise level, because they're giving you a master service agreement of, you know, 70 pages, and you need somebody who is really good with contracts, and you need somebody who is really good with finances, because now actually you need to understand the profitability, your profitability models on everything. When you're a keynote speaker, you're like, look, I charge $X thousand. I'm profitable because right. I don't have that many expenses. And I don't even really need to figure out my profitability. It just is what it is.
Yeah.
Now, if you've got an enterprise and you're like, you've got a burn rate of $X thousand per month, you've got to know how your money works.
Yeah.
So, and then for us, we've got all three of those models playing out. Some licensing deals, which are hard to get, are very profitable, because once you have a pure licensing play, when they pay you the money, it's pure profit, basically. But also require you to have to work really hard to maintain the relationship, because it can become quite transactional quite fast. They're like, we're giving you the money, and you're going, you're giving me the money, and you actually want it to be more than that.
Right.
And train the trainer. You know, all of these models have pros and cons. You know, yeah. Train the trainer is like, you get a relationship, but you lose some of the quality assurance, because you're like, are they as good as I want them to be?
Yeah.
How do I renew their licensing? How do I make sure that they're not running stuff and not paying me for it? So yeah, you got all three of those models playing out.
All right, I want to come back full circle to where we started. Yeah,
I'm throwing a lot at people.
No,
here.
This
I'm
is like, great. This is so great. Yeah. And I derailed us, but going back to the question of what topics work well in a corporate environment.
Well, I think, first of all, you've got to understand which of those three you're after, because keynote and ad hoc have a much broader range of topics that might be of interest. Because, you know, let's say you talk about conflict management, all teams could do with some training on conflict management.
Right.
Let's say that you're a little more eclectic and you're on, I don't know, let's say you're an ex-Olympic athlete, and you're kind of motivational around resilience and focus and high performance, then all teams are probably interested in that. And you're great at a conference, because you're like, oh, you're the guy who won a gold medal doing that thing. It's amazing. I feel inspired. Or, you walked up Everest, even though you don't have limbs and you're blind and whatever it might be. You're like, you're inspiring. But that stuff is less useful at an enterprise level, because at an enterprise level, they're basically saying, we care about two things. We care about how are we focused on the right things, and when are we making money? Mm-hmm. Or three things. The first is, are we compliant? So if you teach something that is like, you got to do this or else you're breaking the law, that's a ongoing sell at an enterprise level. Mm-hmm. The second is, are we helping people focus on the right things so that they're having the impact? And the third is, are we keeping our people engaged in the right way so that we have the best people showing up fully? Mm-hmm. And the truth is, I would suspect that if you currently speak on a particular topic, you'll already have a sense of how enterprise appropriate your topic is, because you'll have been in conversations with people if it is enterprise interesting, and nobody will have approached you if it's not.
you touched on this earlier, that the decision makers for keynotes versus ad hoc or even enterprise are all slightly different. So what does it typically, we talk a lot on the show here about who the event planners are and the decision makers in the keynote space. What does it typically look like for the ad hoc and the enterprise? Who's making the decision? Who are you talking to?
So in the ad hoc, you're typically, it's the team lead, or often it's the executive assistant of the team lead. Mm-hmm. And the team lead has some budget. They've been given, it's trickled down and they've got X $1,000s to spend on training for their team for the year. And so there aren't really any standards that they have to meet. So often they're like, they're calling up their mate going, do you know anybody who does this? And they're like, yeah, I think my friend does it. He lives up the road. Yeah. and you get this person coming in. So you will have a buyer who is a buyer just in because of their position on the team.
Yeah.
If you're selling in an enterprise, then you're selling into the head of learning and development, or the head of organizational development, or sometimes the head of HR. And they're the people who typically would control the training budget. The training person often reports into head of HR or head of OD or head of learning and development. So at the enterprise level, you're typically, you've got an economic client who's your buyer, and then you've got a kind of practical client who's your day-to-day person who's helping you run the thing. You've got a much more complex ecosystem to think about.
Yeah. Can we talk about pricing for a second? Because mm-hmm. I know, there's a bunch of different ways to price this. Like you mentioned, are you pricing this by the person or by the program or by the length of the program or the number of programs or, licensing? And my sense would be, it's probably similar to when people ask, how much should I charge for a keynote? And the answer is like, it depends. But I get that that's a horrible answer and all the variables that go into it, So what are the different variables and factors or some of the different models that people should be considering?
Yeah, I mean, it's you kind of have to do your own research about what the range is in your topic, in your area. You have to think about your brand positioning. Are you high end? Are you medium? Are you low end?
Right.
Because there's a model in the learning and development stage, which is like, I'm putting people through $99 a day training, mm-hmm. but it's scaled. So I'm trying to train 500,000 people a year and I'm making that a bit of money off them, and it's fast, it's furious, it's replicable, it's probably a bit mediocre, but it's basic. And then there are people who charge huge amounts of money for training, kind of in that, it depends on the size, but you can charge anywhere from, literally a day's training can be anything from $3,000 to $60,000, depending on the program and the level of the people coming on the program. It's like sort of weird thing. It's like, okay, you've got senior vice presidents of a big company coming.
Yeah.
I don't want to come on a program that costs $3,000 a day. That's an insult. Yeah. They're like, they're too important for that. So you're like, unless you're charging $60,000 a day, is clearly not of the right caliber. So you get into that just irrationality of pricing.
Yeah.
And it's the same with licensing as well. I mean, nobody really knows how to price licensing. I mean, I'm sure some people do, but as far as I can tell, it's you're feeling your way into it. You've probably got a range. You're sounding them out. You're trying to guess how many people are going to go through the program. You're trying to guess what their budget is for the next 3 years, because you're trying to strike a 3 to 5 year deal with them.
Right.
So I'm afraid it isn't, it depends. It's a hard thing with the pricing.
Do you always price by the, or more or less always price by the program, or do you ever price per head? I would never recommend the per head approach on keynotes, but in this type of approach, it seems I've heard otherwise. What have you found?
Yeah, we price on the program when we're selling programs, but if for train the trainer or for licensing, it's on a per head basis.
Okay. And is there an ideal number of participants you would want in a workshop, a training, a session?
That is another it depends piece. Yeah. It depends on there's just so many factors around that, which is like, are you teaching technical skills or behavior change skills? Is it all hands-on and low-tech, or are you sitting people in front of a laptop and you're just facilitating them through screens on a laptop?
Yeah.
Some stuff is scalable, some stuff is not. Our stuff is soft skills, so-called, and very interactive, and we want our facilitators to be in touch with the people. So we cap ours at 20 people in the room.
Gotcha.
And we have a minimum as well. We have a minimum of 12 because we want a critical mass in the room that makes it work.
Got it. Interesting. You kind of touched on mailing resources. What kind of stuff are you sending ahead that would be materials for the program?
It's again, you kind of make your own rules here, but we send people worksheets, which we've designed, cards, which are kind of training guides. And we used to send people copies of my book, but we stopped doing that now. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. Let me shift gears and let me ask you this. We, at the time of this recording, we are in the thick of this coronavirus stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, people may be listening to this deep into the future, right? Right. And so where all of a sudden, suddenly people are not necessarily working in offices, things are closed mm-hmm. down. Who knows at this point how long this is going to last or what kind of long-term effects this is going to have. But everything that we've covered and talked about thus far, can corporate training be done in a virtual environment?
Oh, it can, and it is, and has been for years. Can it be done really badly in a corporate environment? A big tick. Yep. That's been thoroughly proven. We have lots of case studies around really underwhelming distributed or virtual training.
Yeah.
You have basically two models. One is a virtual in real life training. So think of a series of facilitated webinars.
Yeah.
We've taken our half day programs and gone, it's 4 75-minute programs spread out over 2 months.
Yeah.
And there are pros and cons of that, because our stuff is about trying to create behavior change for people to be more coach-like. Actually spreading it out over time allows people to have structure that makes them practice and report out, so it can be actually helpful. But you also then get only 80% of people showing up for the different webinars because something comes up. So pros and cons.
Right.
You can then do a online program that is cohort based. So you effectively say, all right, we've got a bunch of you together, go. You've got 5 weeks to make your way through the 5 different modules of this program. And quite often you'll have facilitators there who are basically moving stuff along. Yeah. They're keeping an eye out for the technical issues. They're answering questions. They're prompting conversation amongst the participants. They're playing that role of attendant, kind of moving along, making it, getting the stragglers out so they're getting their stuff done. Or you can then do a classic, just evergreen program, which is, here it is. It's entirely self-directed. You sign in, you get to the end of it. Nobody really knows how you did. There's not a whole lot of interaction. And there's a place for all of those types of learning. I mean, for instance, if you run a supermarket, it is self-directed learning is perfect for onboarding a cashier. You're like, we're going to take you through how to cash people out, or we're going to take you through how to fold shirts if you work in the Gap.
Yep.
You don't need somebody to do that. You've got a iPad and you can have somebody showing you that and you can practice it and you can go, tick, I've done it.
Yeah.
If you're trying to learn coaching skills, you need more of a hands-on experience around that.
Yeah. Interesting. Very, very good. Michael, we really appreciate the time. This has been really good. People can't see it right now, but I've got The Coaching Habit, Say Less, Ask More, Change the Way You Lead Forever. If people want to find the book, first of all, give us the nutshell. I know we kind of danced around it, but the book is kind of the core thing that you are teaching on via the corporate training.
Yeah.
So what is
the book is the source of some of the IP that Boxer Crayons uses. So The Coaching Habit came out 4 years ago, and it's like, look, I'm trying to unweird coaching.
Yeah.
Here are 7 good questions, and here's the science of how to make it into a habit. And then I had a new book come out about a month ago called The Advice Trap. And that said, look, turns out for some people, knowing the seven questions is all you need. But for other people, this quest to be curious a little bit longer is harder than you'd think.
Yeah.
So the advice trap takes you into what it takes to shift your behavior. And the key message of the advice trap is, let me show you how to tame your advice monster.
Interesting. Very cool. Are you turning that into its own corporate training program?
This is one of those interesting conversations. What Box of Crayons wants, it wants to use my IP, but it wants to use it in a way that's disassociated from me, because otherwise it gets complicated.
Yep.
And disassociated from the books, because we don't actually want to be tied to Michael's books as the this gives you the shape of the programs. So they're doing a whole bunch of work around that just to figure out how they use IP. So that's been one of the shifts for Box of Crayons, which is we're less now about selling programs. This is the transition that they're in at the moment, and more about going, we have units of IP. How do we combine those in a way that then becomes sellable to our clients?
Interesting. Well, again, Michael, this is really, really fascinating. Good stuff. We appreciate the time. Again, if
my
people want to find out more about you, find out more about Box of Crayons, where can we go?
Yeah. So Box of Crayons is boxofcrayons.com, and that's the enterprise training. As part of me spinning off from Box of Crayons, I've got a new website called mbs.works, and there's assorted online training and books and other bits and pieces there as well.
Very good. Thanks for the time, man. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Grant.
All right, there you go. Hope you enjoyed that conversation. Again, I would encourage you to check out Michael's books. You can find out all of his stuff over at mbs.works. Got to make sure I get that right. Check that out. And then also check out boxofcrayons.com, his corporate training site there. But again, Michael really knows his stuff when it comes to this the corporate training stuff. And again, check out his books. Great stuff. Hey, while you're checking out his books, don't forget to check out The Successful Speaker. Again, 5 steps for booking gigs, getting paid, building your platform out everywhere. Go pick it up. All right, my friends, that wraps up today's episode. We'll catch you next time. You're awesome.